All right, if you're anything like me, you hate running out of food on a trip. It's like a big fear. And so I'm a big fan of snacks during an adventure. And one of my absolute favorite go-to snacks are Wonderful Pistachios. You may be familiar with pistachios and the brand Wonderful Pistachios, but if you're not, they are one of the highest protein nuts out there. 1 ounce serving of Wonderful Pistachios is 6 grams of protein. That's 10% of your daily value. It also includes 9 essential amino acids, and they come with a ton of different flavors, varieties. There's a spicy version, there's lightly salted, there's no salted, there's so many. And every time I go on an adventure, I'm not even lying, I take an entire bag with me. And what's cool too, I love having the Wonderful Pistachio in shell, because then that almost gives me something to do and focus on as I'm paddling or biking through the really monotonous parts of the adventure. Every great adventure is going to have plenty of boring moments, and it's nice to have something to do and also something that is giving you some fuel, like Wonderful Pistachios. So they're one of my favorite adventure snacks, favorite road trip snacks, and definitely leave me feeling better than a lot of other snacks you can turn to. So if you want to learn more about how to fuel your next adventure with Wonderful Pistachios, go to WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's cowboy boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and the friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, that's fine. Just go to Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots as well as free returns and exchanges. They ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today and get ready for this summer. If you ever thought, can I pull off a pair of cowboy boots? Then you should pull on a pair of Tecovas and you'll see. They'll become your new favorite footwear. Cowboys knew what they were doing when they invented this Western wear.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Mason. Today's guest, Heather Bolent, is quite an adventure. She's done the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail. By the way, she's going to share some pretty funny stories about the Appalachian Trail. And has paddled the 100-mile Everglades Wilderness, hiked 1,000 miles on the beach around the, basically around the border of Florida. Has done just so many cool, unique adventures. And today's is no exception. We're going to be talking about paddling the Intercoastal Waterway on the American East Coast, and specifically the Low Country, which is kind of the coast of Georgia and parts of South Carolina and also parts of North Florida. But what she did, she started at her mom's house. She got this idea to paddle from her mom's house, which is in Georgia on the coast, down to her dad's house, which is in Florida. It's like 400 miles apart. She wanted to paddle it, and she thought the idea was crazy, and her dad finally basically woke up from a coma. He was sick and said, you should do that. And so after he passed, unfortunately, in 2022, she was able to do this adventure in honor of him, and
it was just a beautiful adventure. I love adventures that are one of one. You know, there isn't tons of people doing it. There's a huge personal connection. And it was solo. Like, it's such a incredible moment of growth and self-reliance. And it's just some of my favorite types of adventures. So she's going to tell us about this. She was on her way down to her job in Key West, and she pulled over on the side of the road. Thank you so much, Heather. So if you want to follow Heather on Instagram, you can just look for the chickens. Yeah, it's a great follow, great stories, amazing pictures of this adventure. Like, I'm telling you, I always tell you, when you listen, go look at the pictures of the things we're talking about. It helps put it into perspective. And this one is definitely, if you don't know much about the Intercoastal Waterway or the Low Country, please go look that up. It's such an underappreciated adventure and nature destination, in my opinion. All right, let's go ahead and dive in. All right, folks, welcome to the Adventure Sports Podcast. Super stoked about this one. My first question is always, where are you coming from? And is that home for you? I know the answer, and I know that's not home, but why don't you answer it? First of all, welcome, and where are you coming from?
Yes, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm excited to be here. Yes, I am coming to you from my car, which is a type of home for me at times throughout my life. But I am driving from Lake Worth, Florida, down to Key West for my job down there for the winter. So I'm right now just parked on the side of the interstate.
Side of the interstate, I've recorded a few of these episodes in my car and in my truck, and yeah, it's a fun experience. I haven't done it in a while, but thank you so much for making the time. I know we had to adjust a little bit, and I'm sorry about that. And but we're gonna make this awesome. Well, tell us, how recently did you finish your most recent adventure from paddling from St. Simons Island to Lake Worth?
Less than a week ago, I finished. Yeah.
What are you going through? What are you thinking about right now?
Oh, wow. Quite a lot. To be honest, I felt like I processed a lot of the kayaking trip while I was still on it, because as soon as I hit ground and finished that trek, I knew I had to just get ready and start rolling to get going on my next adventure. So it's been a lot of kind of moving forward, getting into sort of different mindset, different, you know, change of pace, going down to work on a sailboat as a deckhand.
Wow.
In Key West. Yeah.
Jeez. Well, what, tell us about why this adventure, because you've done a lot of big adventures, including some that were much, like, frankly, longer than this. You've had some amazing experiences, from the AT to the PCT to 1,000 miles around Florida, hiking like the perimeter. That is wild. I don't think I've ever heard of that. I'd love to hear more about that too, but why this adventure and starting where you started and ending where you ended?
Sure. So I was inspired to do this paddling adventure probably about 7 years ago now. I was born and raised in Maine, and that's where I spent the most part of my life. My dad moved down to St. Simons Island in Georgia probably about 13 years ago. My mom moved down to Lake Worth, Florida about 7 years ago. And at one point, I just remember joking around with them because they both ended up getting places that were on the Intracoastal Waterway. Mm-hmm. And many people don't know, but that is a navigable waterway for people who choose not to sail or travel in the ocean, but a little bit inland, so they're protected. Mm-hmm. And it goes up the East Coast. And so I thought at the time, I said, oh, wouldn't that be funny if I paddled between your guys's places? And they weren't such fans of that at the time.
That's funny.
Probably just thought I was, you know, just another crazy idea of mine, didn't really think much of it. And so I didn't really think much of it at the time. I just was joking around with them. I didn't even know if it was truly possible. But then my dad passed away last year, and prior to that, he had gotten a stroke about 5 years prior. And when he came to, he was sort of in a comatose stage for a while, and he came to, and he was still in the hospital. And out of the blue, you know, he started talking again, and he just said, "I think you should still do that paddling trip." And it was just so poignant to me because I hadn't really been thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And it meant a lot that he was thinking about it. And it was almost one of the first things he was thinking about after this sort of traumatizing experience he had and in the hospital. And so I kind of started thinking a little bit more serious about it since then. And then, so after he passed, you know, I've always gone into nature for kind of healing and as a way to process emotions. And so I felt like doing this paddling trip would be a perfect opportunity for that. It took a lot of planning, a lot of logistics. So it took probably about a year for me to actually to do it once I set my mind to it. But that was where the original inspiration came from, and just a way to connect my parents' homes.
From door to door.
Yep.
That is so cool. That area, the low country in Georgia, is I've biked through it one time, and just on the roads, of course, and it was breathtaking. And I just think, how have I not heard more about this area? And you were starting this trip up in that area. What were you anticipating, like, coming across? Like, it you truly do get to stay intercoastal the whole time. Did it seem like a daunting adventure to you compared to the other things you'd done?
I definitely felt daunted by this particular adventure because I was doing it solo and because it's not a popular thing to do. So I didn't see anyone else out there doing what I was doing. there were some kayakers I would see here and there, but they were either out fishing or they were just doing short little recreational paddles. But it's not like hiking the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail, where you see other people hiking and they're all doing what you're doing. So it's easier to make friends or not feel as alone. But this was definitely something that was new to me. I had worked as a kayaking and stand-up paddleboard tour guide in Florida a couple of years ago. I used to do bioluminescence and dolphin and manatee tours in the Titusville, Cocoa area. So I felt experienced as far as paddling goes, but I had never done a long-distance paddle before. So I wasn't quite sure, you know, how long I could paddle for, how far I could paddle, what it was going to do to my body. So it was whole new territory. And it was something that I felt very much alone in, but it was also a great challenge. So I loved the idea of just kind of being out there on my own, doing something that was completely out of my wheelhouse as far as something that been accustomed to doing before, like hiking, for example.
Mm-hmm. What is one of the first things you saw that you didn't expect to see? Because I feel like with it being unknown, you might have, you know, there's no way to know like what you might come across. There's, of course, a lot you can gain from reading about other people's experience. But what's something that really surprised you early on?
Southeast Georgia was beautiful. It's a lot of marshlands. It was very desolate, though. I hardly saw any other people out there. When you're in Florida on the Intracoastal Waterway, there's a lot of boaters. And most of what people see of the Intracoastal Waterway is from the causeways when they're driving over the bridges to get to the beaches. And it's very busy and there's development and there's boaters. But especially the Southeast Georgia section was just, you know, just nature. No buildings. I saw, you know, a fishing boat maybe once every 2 hours. It was definitely kind of a trial by fire because I had to paddle basically 22 miles to get to a campsite.
On the first day?
On the first day. And I did not know, like I was saying, like how fast I could paddle and, you know, what type of tides I might run into, because you have to deal a lot more with tides in that sort of estuary. Yeah. part of the intracoastal. And but there's so many oyster beds up in that area, so it makes it very difficult to just sort of pull over with your kayak and get out and, you know, camp on an island, because there really wasn't any type of opportunity like that. It was all just kind of muddy marshland that would get flooded when the tide rose, and then just tons of razor sharp oyster beds everywhere. So I was afraid just to get out of my kayak, you know, anywhere along that section, until I finally came across a few sort of old kind of oyster shell beds, just these little tiny these little islands that were just made from old oyster shells. And so that was, I think, something that made it feel a bit more daunting and, you know, put more pressure on me from the very beginning. Is okay.
It's like, oh well, day one was already a huge challenge. And I've heard other adventurers too talk about those tides being so challenging. Did you have to time it with anything? Did you have to plan on the tides, or did you just say, I'm going to paddle during the day and, you know, do my regular day, and whatever I do, I do?
Yeah, it was basically that mindset of, I might run into, you know, a tide that's against me, but I'm just going to have to paddle harder, because I knew that I didn't have much daylight. And that's the other part of doing, you know, adventures this time of the year, is mm-hmm. you have a short window of daylight. And so as soon as I got up in the morning, I would start paddling, and whether the tides were with me or against me, it was more just kind of a matter of luck, because it also just depended on which part of the intracoastal you were in. If you were in a more narrow part versus a wider section, if you were closer to an inlet or not. So they would change frequently, just, you know, in one day, depending on where I was. And at first I tried to gauge, you know, my day as much as I could on the tides. But again, it was just sort of one of those things where I just had to get up early in the morning and just get started, and whatever happened. You know, the wind also ended up being a major factor, even more so than the tides. And that would affect me more so when I got further south in Florida.
Unbelievable. We'll take us through this. The second day was another 22 mile trek, where you're starting to think, oh gosh, this is gonna be tough. That, you know, I paddle a lot, and that's a decent amount. You know, that's like putting 22 miles in a hike. It's a long day.
It's a very long day. Yeah. And I would start off in the morning when it was quiet, you know, the winds are calmest in the morning and it was nice, and I would be ready to go, had my motivation. And then usually by the middle of the day, that's when the winds would pick up, it would get harder. And that's also typically when your motivation would start going down, which I found with through hiking as well. I felt like the morning was always the time where I was pumped up, ready to go, excited for the day. And then the middle of the day is when you start to dip a little bit and you get a little bit tired and you're not quite sure if you can do it anymore. And you start thinking to yourself, why am I out here? And what am I doing with my life? All those questions start coming to your mind. And then by the end of the day or later in the afternoon, you just, all you're focused on is, all right, where am I going to set up camp for the night? And how am I going to get there before it gets dark? It just, you kind of turn into more survival mode.
What was one of your favorite campsites? I there's so many good pictures on your Instagram, and I having experienced some of these similar places, but not like doing what you've done,
it is, there is something so magical about an evening on a beach on an island that you're all alone on and camping. It's just something very, very special about that. Did you have many of those nights?
Yeah, absolutely. That first night in Georgia when I just camped on that little oyster shell mound, that was just spectacular. It was beautiful. This bald eagle came and perched on this dead tree near my tent, which I felt was symbolic. You know, it just made me think of my dad, that he was there looking out over me. And it was so peaceful and quiet at night. All I could hear was just the waves lapping on the shore. And every once in a while, you'll hear dolphins, like a puff of a dolphin breathing, is because they typically tend to hunt earlier in the evening. And there are just so many beautiful little beachy islands in the Intracoastal Waterway that I think a lot of people don't realize. And I found that also when I paddled down through the Everglades and the 10,000 islands. It's very similar down there as well. And I think that a lot of Floridians and a lot of people who, you know, come here to do adventures, they don't realize that, because I mean, I hardly ever saw anybody out there. I always had these little islands all to myself when I was camping, and I would see people out there during the day, and they would, you know, pull their boat up to one of the islands and hang out there for during the daytime. But there's such perfect little campsites at night too, just, you know, very calm and peaceful, and you feel like you're a world away even though you have development around you.
That's funny you mentioned that about the dolphins blowing air out at night, because you know, things calm down so much at night. Not every night, of course, but a lot of nights it'll be calm and quiet, and you hear a little bit of ocean water lapping on the beach, but you hear some sound, you're like, what in the world is that? And you can hear them blowing air quite a ways away. And mm-hmm. Most nights when I go out on the beach and it's quiet and calm, especially in an intercoastal waterway where there's definitely no waves, you do hear it off in the distance. And that's cool that you heard that as well. It's a really neat experience. Manatees too, you can hear them breathing sometimes, and sounds beautiful. So, you know, how are you adjusting to being alone? Because your other adventures, like through hikes, were you typically with others or started with others? How did that work?
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible.
Are you looking to sell anything at all online? Well, I would advise you to look into Shopify. They are a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. I use Shopify every day at my day job. It has been with us since our company was a tiny little team all the way up to where we are today, one of the biggest breweries in the country. Whether you're auctioning off autographed apparel, selling sleek skis, or selling non-alcoholic beer like we are at Athletic Brewing, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their personal POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. We manage a podcast, a blog, all that right there on our Shopify store. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and has extensive help resources for whenever you're dealing with an obstacle. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ASP, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ASP for Adventure Sports Podcast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ASP.
That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode.
Yes and no. On my through hikes, because I did both of them southbound, it's a lot less popular than going northbound. So you tend to be alone more often, at least during the day. At night, there's usually, you know, one or two other people at a campsite. But doing the Intracoastal Waterway, again, where there's really nobody else out there, kayaking alongside you, you're not meeting other kayakers along the way. It was definitely a solitary experience, but I found myself really enjoying it because I felt like I was connecting to a side of myself that I don't get to connect to very often, because usually in our everyday lives, we're so bombarded by just distractions, you know, whether it's just other people around us or our environments or our phones. But when you're out doing an adventure on your own, you just have your own thoughts. And of course, I would listen to music sometimes when I was paddling, especially if I needed sort of like an extra boost or encouragement. I would listen to music or, you know, podcasts even. Sometimes it would be a boring stretch or just, you know, tough for me to push myself. So then I would listen to something to kind of help the hours go by. But I loved the challenge of it. I loved thinking on my feet, having to be strategic every day, looking at the weather every day, thinking about what I was going to do for water and food pretty much every day, and shelter, you know, how far I was going to paddle. So there's never really a moment where you're not 100% in tune with yourself. You know, and you know, you find yourself talking to yourself sometimes. but it's, I don't know, it's really eye-opening, and I kind of miss that version of myself and who I was out there.
You know, I know you weren't alone with the AT for a while, because you had a rooster with you. Can you tell us that story?
Yes.
Where you got your name?
That was a good segue. Yeah, so I started the Appalachian Trail alone. Also, just not really knowing what I was doing, and just kind of seeing how it goes. And I got to, I think it was Maryland, and there was a rooster. It was a fancy Polish crested rooster. People like show them. Mm-hmm. And he was out in the middle of the woods by himself, so it was unusual to see, you know, a rooster or chicken on its own, and especially in the woods. And I kind of just stopped there for about 30 minutes, and I looked around, and I kind of just sat and observed him and see if he would, you know, eat some trail mix that I had. And I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this rooster. But I grew up with chickens. Mm-hmm. As pets, so I knew how to handle them. So I did not have any cell phone service. So I didn't have any way of calling for help. And I just decided to scoop him up and hike with him. And I ended up hiking with him for 42 miles.
What did he do when you grabbed him? Was he just like, okay?
Pretty much. Yeah. He had been out there for a few days, I found out later.
Oh gosh.
Because other hikers had seen him and just, you know, kept going because they didn't know what to do. And it was one of those situations where you always think like, oh, maybe somebody else will know what to do. Mm-hmm. And then I was that somebody else where it's like, I knew what to do. So I'm like, all right, I have to do this. And you know, he was a little bit weakened, a little bit probably scared of just like being out there on his own. So it wasn't too hard to catch him. And then I just kind of held him under one arm, and altogether we were just hiking for 2 days. But he slept with me in my tent. And
how did that go?
It was fine, actually. <It's>
just... He's probably like, this is way better than the alternative of being out here on my own trying to survive as a chicken.
Yeah, he didn't seem to mind. I fed him, you know, some oatmeal that I had, and I would try to set him down every once in a while while I was hiking to see if he wanted to, you know, eat some grass or drink some water. But at the time, I was able to call my boyfriend who met us in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, and we brought him to a farm animal sanctuary called Poplar Springs, and he's actually still living there today.
Wow.
So he's, you know, got a happy, healthy life, and it was quite an experience hiking with a rooster. Everybody wanted to stop and ask me questions about him.
I bet you hardly could go. People wanted to stop and ask, what in the world's going on?
Yeah, and the news traveled quickly. A lot of other hikers heard about it, and then various media organizations heard about it and wanted to call me for interviews because it was just such a bizarre story. But my trail name originally was Mama Duck. And then once this happened, one of my hiker friends said that my name should be Mama Cluck now. So ever since then, yep.
Mama Cluck and your Instagram's for the chickens. Is that reference to that too?
That was actually a reference earlier to that.
So this was like destined.
Yeah, chickens just have a way of finding me.
Golly.
I like I was saying, I grew up with chickens as pets, and they are what influenced me to become vegetarian when I was about 10 years old, and then became vegan about 10 years ago. And so, you know, it's just, I felt like they kind of shaped the trajectory of my life and kind of made me think about, you know, other species and our relationships to them. And I ended up working for a farm animal protection organization and advocating, you know, against factory farms and so forth. So it's always been, and chickens especially, have always been kind of near and dear to my heart, just because I feel like they kind of helped open my eyes to what I find purpose for in the world.
Ever since that experience, are you, I mean, do you look for the next chicken? Do you look for the next animal to kind of that wants to hop aboard the adventure? Or is it just kind of like, hey, if it happens again, it happens again, but I'm not gonna force anything.
Yeah, it's more the latter. If it happens again, it happens again. Yeah.
Funny. Well, I saw some pictures from this adventure near, I think it was Cumberland Island, some horses on the beach. I didn't expect to see that. Was there anything like that where you're like, whoa, didn't think I'd see? I saw a chandelier hanging from, I think it was some mangroves or something at one point. Like I'm sure you came across some random stuff.
Yeah, I had heard that there were wild horses on Cumberland Island, but I had never made it out there. So this is my first time camping on the island. It's beautiful, just gorgeous trails. You know, you have the live oaks and the Spanish moss and, but yeah, the wild horses were amazing. Yeah, the chandelier was pretty humorous. That was probably the strangest thing I've seen, kind of washed up on an island or hanging in the trees. I did find a duck decoy, speaking of birds. The duck decoy kind of became my mascot for the rest of the kayaking trip, and I attached it to the front. So it was sort of like kayak bowsprit, you might say, and sort of help me, you know, give me positive thoughts for staying afloat like a duck. I did see dolphins every day that I was out there, except for my last 2 days around Palm Beach. But otherwise, every day of the Intracoastal, there are dolphins. Lots of manatees, especially in the Indian River Lagoon. And probably one of my most exciting wildlife observations was I saw some flamingos.
Oh, yeah. That's a rarity.
I know. I was very excited because I'm part of a few different birding groups on Facebook, and I remember seeing that people had been spotting these flamingos over the last several months because of a hurricane that came through Florida this summer, and it actually blew a lot of flamingos off course that were migrating between Mexico and Cuba. And so people have been seeing them around Florida, which they actually used to be native to Florida.
Yep. Which is why, you know, you see so many t-shirts and tourist stuff that have flamingos in Florida, but they're not as populous as, I don't know, a lot of tourists might think. They used to be, not anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Used to only, I mean, you know, ever since their populations were kind of decimated during the bird plumage trade, late 1800s, they've really only been seen in zoos or wildlife parks. So they have not been out in the wild, but it's amazing that they are kind of making a comeback now. But I did not expect to see them on the East Coast or, you know, as far north as the Indian River Lagoon up near Pettisville and Cape Canaveral, but there's a flock of four flamingos on a little island up there that's a bird sanctuary, and I was so blown away to see them, just so excited. So that was probably one of my favorite sort of unexpected sights from the trip.
Unbelievable. So you know, I know you're relatively fresh off this experience. What do you think is one of the lasting impressions that this adventure will have on you? I know there's a deeper meaning to this. It sounds like, you know, this being kind of in honor of your father, there's quite a bit of meaning there. What do you think will be a lasting impression or lesson you've learned from this adventure?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that if you set your mind to something, that you can achieve it. And I know that sounds cliche, but this is really a testament to that, because it was just sort of this idea that I had and just decided to make it come to fruition. And at the time, not even knowing that there was, you know, like a paddling trail that goes around Florida, and there are resources out there for people who do want to do that. But it was something that I just kind of mapped out on my own and did all the logistics and planning for on my own. And then as soon as I got in the water that first day off St. Simon's Island, I definitely had an emotional experience, because it was sort of like, wow, like I did it. I made this happen. Got in the water and like, all right, now I just have to paddle. But yeah, the hard part was, you know, the years worth of planning that it took to get up to that point. And it was just one of those realizations that, you know, like if there's something that you really want and you really set your mind to it and you focus and you do all the necessary steps to plan and make it happen, it's, you know, there's a very high likelihood that you can make these things happen. And it was such a beautiful and much needed experience, and a very calming experience, I will say. I felt very, very much at peace with many aspects, if not all aspects of my life while I was out there on the water, because you're just living in the moment. Hmm. You're just very much in the present. And it was something that, yeah, I felt like I needed that for some clarity and just to help sort of like calm my mind, my emotions. And so it was, even though it was hard work for sure, very physically difficult, and a lot of planning, like I was saying, but all in all, it was a very, a clearing experience of the mind, I would say.
Did you expect that?
No, I didn't, you know, I didn't really know what to expect, but, but I didn't realize that it would have that kind of peaceful effect on me. Yeah, I think that was something I didn't really know what happened. But you know, it's similar to through hiking, where you're out, you're exercising every day, you've got fresh air every day, you're sleeping outside, and so all of that's, you know, going to give you endorphins and kind of boost your mood. But yeah, it's just, there's something about getting out there on the water, especially. Where it's just you and the elements. You kind of just have to surrender to everything.
And there's something about when you do an adventure that there's not a guidebook for, and there's not, you know, an annual list of completion for. If you feel like, you know, there's obviously people have done similar things, or like, you know, there's resources to learn, like you were saying, but no one's done exactly what you're about to do. And especially the way you're doing it, it is a really empowering experience. And not that doing a through hike or doing a race isn't, but there's something really different when you have to put in all the planning yourself and logistics, and there isn't like anyone waiting at the finish line that's like, all right, you did this thing, you get your belt buckle, or you get this. It's really unique. Makes you feel like you can do anything, which I'm sure completing the AT makes you feel that way too.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you don't mind me asking, I want to I try, especially with someone with a lot of big adventures like you, I kind of want to focus on one thing and talk about that, just because it's like, how do you cover all your adventures in an hour? You can't, is what I've learned. But you do have another really unique experience I want to talk about, and that's walking around the perimeter of Florida and picking up trash. Can you tell me what that adventure was and when you did that?
Yes, that was in 2019. And that was another sort of crazy idea that I had to bring attention to the amount of plastic pollution in our environment. And it was something that I started again kind of researching, see if anybody else had ever done it before. I had never heard of anyone walking the entire coastline of Florida,
yeah,
along the beaches. But I did find someone who had actually walked 400 miles of the East Coast doing the same thing, which I thought was amazing. So I reached out to him, and he suggested doing this epic trek together, and we had never met. So I was like, well, let's, you know, have lunch first. See if, you know,
see, yeah, if we get along. Jump into too serious. Yeah, let's have lunch. See if we can do 1200 miles of walking together.
And yeah, but you know, we decided it was something that we could do. So that was something that we both ended up doing the logistics for together. Also took about a year of planning and just meeting up and, you know, discussing how we were going to do it, you know, how we were going to get media attention, what we were going to do with the plastic that we were picking up off the beaches. But we started at the Florida-Georgia border, so at Fort Clinch.
Yep.
And then we walked all the way down to Key Biscayne. We'd do sort of like a leapfrogging thing with our truck. So we would pick up bags. We use burlap bags, so not plastic bags, to pick up all the plastic that we were finding on the beaches. And then we would stow them at different places along A1A, the road along, mm-hmm, the beach there. And then we would get a ride, whether it was Uber or somebody we met on the beach who we would talk with, and then they would offer us a ride back up to the truck. And then we would drive, pick up the bags that we had hidden, and then we would camp for the night, whether it was just sleeping in the truck. We actually ended up getting like a little like sleeper trailer as well that we towed behind us, or just camping, you know, tent. And then we had different places along the coastline of Florida where we kind of stockpiled all the bags of plastic, because we were going to use them at the end for like a public display. But we also had a canoe, so we would use the canoe to cross the inlets. So we would hike the beaches, cross the inlets with the canoe, figured a way to get the canoe back to the truck. We got to the Everglades and we paddled the 100-mile wilderness waterway via the Everglades.
Yep.
Picked up as much trash, you know, plastic as we could while we were doing that in the canoe. That was quite an experience because there's no cell phone service or anything. And we had to bring, you know, 10 days worth of water and food with. And then we got to the end of that paddling trail, resumed walking, walked up the Gulf Coast as much as possible. And then it gets into just kind of like a lot of mangroves in that the big bend of Florida. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't really walk along that. So we just kind of did as much as we could around that sort of curve of Florida, and then all the way up to Pensacola. And then we went around and collected all the bags of plastic. We had a kind of a flatbed trailer. We took it to the Florida State Capitol. We got a permit to dump it on the front steps of the State Capitol.
How do you get a permit to dump trash on the front? So I saw that picture and I'm like, I got to ask you, you kept all the trash you collected, like the 30,000 pounds. And how did you do that? How do you get trash on the Florida State Capitol steps?
It's, you know, it's easier than you would
think. You had to get in line. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So exactly. What was that conversation or process like?
It was, honestly, it was just a form that you fill out online to do like an event at the state capitol and you describe what your event's going to be. So I told them, you know, typed out, we're going to be dumping, you know, 3 tons of plastic on the front steps and clean it up afterwards. So we got the permit. Jeez. And we did that, and we were there for a whole day, and we reached out to various news reporters and media outlets, and they came and did interviews with us. And basically we were trying to get the attention of Florida State lawmakers and try to change some of the legislation in Florida to ban single-use plastics, or at least certain single-use plastics, from coastal municipalities. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the beaches are some of Florida's, you know, like, biggest revenue source. You know, everyone comes to Florida to go to the beaches, and they're just getting trashed, and there's just more and more plastic ending up on the beaches every year. Granted, you know, a lot of it does wash up on the beach from the Gulf Stream, and it's not all coming from the shore, from, you know, people or businesses along the shoreline, but just the, you know, plastic in general is just becoming pervasive in our environment. So we were trying to bring awareness to that. However, as you can imagine, that is an uphill battle in Florida to try to convince businesses to get rid of single-use plastics. Oh, so yes.
Let's take a quick message break and hear from the folks that help make this show possible.
If you're like me, you have a lot of things you love to do, but you're not always 100% focused at getting those things done. Maybe you drink too much coffee like I do. You have ambitions that maybe exceed your ability to focus or ability to have the energy and to balance it all. Well, if you're like me with that, I have found that Magic Mind really helps me be productive. And what they do, it's a little shot of this green liquid that's basically, it's incredibly refreshing, but it helps me focus. It's full of really wonderful things that can help me cut back on some of the coffee I've been drinking too much of lately. And it's so easy. I just open it up, take the shot, recycle the container, and it makes me feel more productive and focused. It's also had really great effects on my sleep, and I'm able to bring more creative thoughts and energy into producing this podcast. And also, as someone that's not always on top of their nutrition, this is really helpful for me to make sure I'm getting really good, high-quality ingredients in my body. So if you're interested to learn more or to try Magic Mind, go to magicmind.com. That's magic, M-A-G-I-C, mind, mind.com/adventuresports. And to get 50% off your subscription for the next 10 days, use the code ADVENTURESPORTS20. After the 10 days, the discount is always 20% off, but you can get 50% right now. But you only got 10 days to get it. Again, magicmind.com/adventuresports.
That is plenty of that for now. Let's get back into the episode. You know, I often say here, you know, Florida's environment is our economy. So
Exactly. If
our environment, and this goes for a lot of places, if our environment isn't doing well and it's trashed and whatnot, well, guess what's going to happen to the economy? All the things we enjoy about Florida now, and you know what our economy enjoys, tourists and folks come and experience these beaches, they're not going to want to come if there's trash everywhere. They're not going to want to come if there's red tide. They're not going to want to be here if we don't take care of this place. So it is in the best interest of businesses, too, to make these changes before it's too late and they suffer.
Absolutely.
So, no, I think it's an amazing initiative. You also did this barefoot. Am I correct? Or a lot of it?
A lot of it barefoot. I did have to wear shoes for a time because I actually started getting tendonitis on my feet from going barefoot.
Was it hard to walk at an angle? Was that a challenge?
Yes.
Because the beach, when I've taken long walks on the beach, you walk at an angle because the beach actually slopes down to the water in a lot of places. And, you know, usually you get to balance it out because whenever you walk down the beach, you walk back. But y'all were going around. So you were kind of at the same slope every day. Did that affect things, being a thru hiker?
Yeah, that's a very interesting observation that most people don't think about. But yeah, you do kind of feel sort of offset after a while, like your hips are, you know, not level anymore. So it was, Yeah, I mean, you do get used to it. So okay. After a while, it wasn't something that was affecting us as far as just like our walking gait. But just, you know, walking in the sand is difficult. That's a workout in itself.
Did you discover any beaches that were like, wow, this is amazing? Never heard about this.
Oh, all the time. Yeah, just, I mean, again, like Florida has so many hidden gems that a lot of people just do not know about. And especially, even like Cape Canaveral National Seashore is gorgeous, you know, about 20 miles of undeveloped coastline. Beautiful. Also, no cell phone service out there. Again, the Everglades, the 10,000 Islands, that area was beautiful. Hardly saw anyone. Along the Gulf Coast, Anna Maria Island was amazing.
That's my local beach.
Really? Okay.
Coquina, Longboat Key, Bradenton Beach, all that. That's the closest. We do have, you probably missed, how did you get from, like, say, Anna Maria to, I guess you'd go to Fort DeSoto, which is north of there. Like, you'd paddle between or paddle. Go around?
Yeah, we paddle the canoe all the way up.
That's amazing.
All the way out there, walk around the island, pick up as much as we could, paddle back. It was pretty wild. It's one of those things, I think, where sometimes almost the less you know is better in certain situations, because then you're not as worried about things that could go wrong or it's good to be prepared, of course, but looking back now, I'm just like, wow, I can't believe we did some of these things, like, you know, paddling through the Everglades. We didn't know that we needed to have navigational charts, like boat charts. Neither of us were really boat people. So the only thing we had to navigate was the Everglades National Park map that they give you, like, at the visitor center.
For free.
For free.
No way. What were you looking? I mean, that's awesome, one, but two, yeah, that could be scary when you look back and think, oh my gosh, we were really putting ourselves in danger. What were you looking for? Just like, okay, there's the island, let's go to that one. And then we, you know, basically set our navigation by the next thing we need to, next waypoint.
Basically, yeah, we didn't have a GPS. We didn't have one of those, you know, Garmin inReaches at the time or anything. So I was sitting in the front of the canoe and I was sort of the navigation person. So I would just look at the map like, all right, I think we got to go this way. But out there, everything looks the same. All those islands, they're just all mangroves. So it's all just flat, you know, and it's so hard sometimes to even differentiate, you know, island from island, because they all just kind of blend into each other. And we ended up doing sort of like the inland route for about half of it, and then you can go out to sort of the outer islands where it's a little bit easier to navigate. The waters are a little bit rougher though, but it's not so much in the, you know, true swamps over the Everglades. So amazing experience. So.
You know, what would you say for this experience? I'm going to ask you about this for both experiences, because they're so cool. 10 years from now, somebody asks you, what's one of the coolest stories or most amazing experiences from that adventure? What do you think in 10 years you're going to, you know, is going to come to mind? Is you're going to say, like, yeah, this is a really amazing story that happened from that experience? Let's do that question for the walk around Florida as well as the paddle on the intercoastal.
I would say, I mean, definitely the Everglades Wilderness Water Paddling Trail stands out to me. It's just something that was really crazy and kind of a unique experience to get out there. And the 10,000 Islands, just how beautiful it was, and how I would imagine that area would be similar to maybe how the Florida Keys looked before they got developed. Yeah, I would say just that area is just stunning to see, like, the real, the natural Florida, as they say. And also, not any one particular instance, but just the kindness of strangers it just renews your faith in humanity, because we would meet people who, you know, we would tell them what we were doing and they would offer us a place to stay in their house, you know, just complete strangers. We would, you know, they'd put us up for the night. They'd make us dinner. We ran into other people who would pay for a hotel room for us. They would just give us $100. And we met other people who would, you know, give us rides. And just amazing, you know, when you're out in the world doing that type of adventure, it does really surprise you sometimes, just the generosity of people, complete strangers who don't know you at all, but they believe in you and what you're doing. And so that will always stick with me. The kayak paddling trip, I would say just the wildlife, the dolphins especially, they're so playful and they're so intelligent, and it just seems like they're just playing with you, you know, they're just swimming around you. I had one experience where a dolphin actually came up right off my bow of my kayak and came up about four times, which I had never seen before. You know, my, you know, almost 2 years of working as a kayak tour guide, I'd never seen a dolphin kind of play in like the bow, you know, wake, like they do with boats, like bigger boats. So that felt very, you know, kind of magical, just like, wow, this, you know, you just feel like you have a connection to the world around you.
These are all really unique experiences, including a lot of the other things you've done, the through hikes and whatnot. Do you, you know, I never want an adventurer to feel pressure to answer the question of what's next, you know, and if it's nothing, that's completely fine. But do you think about what's next when you're out there, or do you just kind of let the adventure come to the mind when it comes to your mind?
I would say, yeah, the adventures will just come to me when they come to me. Like this paddling trip was something that was on my mind, like I said, for probably 7 years. I don't have anything else that's kind of been nagging at me right now, except, you know, of course, there's the Continental Divide Trail, because once you do the Appalachian Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail, everybody asks if you're going to do the CDT.
Yeah.
And so that is in my mind of something that would be sort of like a natural, you know, next hike. But right now I'm just kind of focused on what's next, you know, working for the winter season down in Key West, and then afterwards, not quite sure what's next. But no big adventures that have kind of been sort of nagging at me or, you know, on the back burner, which is why, you know, it felt good to do this paddling trip, because it was kind of always there in the back of my mind. It's something that, you know, I teased around at the idea, and then I was like, all right, you know, I think it's time. I'm finally going to do it, because otherwise I'm just going to keep thinking about it. And I don't want 20 years to go by and think to myself, oh, I should have done that, you know, when I could have. And I feel like for the last several years, I've just kind of been living my life of like, all right, I'm just, you know, going to do the things that inspire me and that excite me and, you know, that sound like fun and are meaningful to me, and just going to do it while I can, rather than putting it off, because it's, you know, you just never know. And yeah, might as well just get out there, live your life.
Trash the Capitol building every chance you get.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that, you know, we do have a lot of people that do adventures for a cause, and a lot that, you know, do it for just because. And you never know who's watching or who's listening, or some of the ripple effects or some of the seeds it plants for others. So it sounds like a really impactful adventure, but both personally and for awareness for what you're trying to bring awareness to.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree. You know, I always do like to have sort of a bigger purpose or message to adventures that I go on. My hike on the Appalachian Trail was a fundraiser for the organization I work for the Humane League. This paddle, I did end up creating a little fundraiser on my Instagram page for the Marine Resources Council. Which is located in Palm Bay on the east coast of Florida. And they are dedicated to restoring the Indian River Lagoon, which is just an amazing section of the Intracoastal Waterway. That's where I saw the flamingos and the highest concentration of dolphins and manatees along the trek. So they're doing good work every day. They started in 1983, so they've been around for a while, and they are doing a lot of restoration work, trying to make sure that the Indian River Lagoon stays healthy and, you know, a productive habitat for the wildlife. And I'm sure you heard about the manatee die-off that happened a couple of years ago with the excess fertilizers and nitrates that got into the water and caused the seagrass to not get enough sunlight and die. And, you know, seagrass is a manatee's primary food source. And so a lot of them ended up starving. And so, you know, it's things like that. I mean, like we were touching upon earlier with our wildlife down here in Florida is just so imperative, not only intrinsically to the species that depend on it, but also for those of us, you know, humans that live here. And it's just so important that we do what we can to try and tread lightly and really champion for causes that are helping to preserve it.
That's awesome. I mean, but I was going to say, when you look at the history of Florida conservation, any initiative that's been done or any success from the Everglades itself to springs to anything done was oftentimes started by a single individual who had the audacity to believe they could make a difference, or a very small group of people that decided to do something, and it just dominoes up. And so I encourage anybody, any task, whether it be doing the adventure itself to doing something to help create these places where we actually have the adventures, take action in some way, because you just never know how it connects the dots and never know what effect it has later on to somebody else. So thanks for doing what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
Thanks for pulling over on the side of the interstate on your way down to the Keys. That's what made this possible. So
I appreciate you very much, and get back on the road.
All right. Enjoy. Drive safe.
Thank you. I will.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to growing the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.